This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Mira Sivasodhi. It is our health and living segment, and today we're kicking off a new series. It is titled our public health series, and it's going to be done in collaboration with the Galen Center for Health and Social Policy and the CEO with us today, Azrul Muhammad Khalib. Welcome to the show, Azrul. How are you today?
Very well, thank you. All raring start.
Yes, raring to go. Azrul, you just want to tell us very quickly what the Galen Center for Health and Social Policy is all about.
Well, the Galen Center for Health and Social Policy is really a think tank that specializes in the areas of health policy as how it affects the social environment. So what we're looking is to connect the two together, which is the health sector and the social sector, and then putting these issues together.
Okay, all right. And when you talk about the whole idea of putting this together, what made you want to do it? I mean, did you think that there was a gap in the healthcare industry, or there's not enough discourse? What is it, Azrul?
Well, very often when we have discussions, we usually have them between doctors, patient groups, NGOs, civil society, medical practitioners and ministries. And very often there's no neutral platform or stakeholder that is really wanting to discuss these issues simply on the basis that the issue is of importance and of neutral ground. So we decided, let's set up a platform where people can come together and discuss these issues and to be able to have a constructive outcome at the end of it. So I think Galen Center is filling a gap that exists in the Malaysian think tank world as we know it.
As far as healthcare is concerned.
Exactly.
So this show is actually going to explore key issues, policies and practices in healthcare that impacts your health and your well-being. So we would love you to interact with us, to engage with us on our Facebook page. Just go on to BFM, The Bigger Picture Facebook page, and we want to hear your voice. Call us today. The number is 03-77-109-1000. You can tweet us at BFM Radio or WhatsApp 018-789-8899. So we're going to kick off this public health series with today's topic of vaccination. What will it take to convince the anti-vaxxers? We do know that there is a growing number of the population that is resisting this idea of vaccination. Malaysia has had a national immunization program, which has very much been a success story. But I suppose having a movement like this doesn't work very much to our advantage. But joining us as well, together with Azrul, is Dr. Rohani Jahiz. She's head of the Vaccine Prevention of Disease, Food and Waterborne Ministry of Health Malaysia, and Dato Dr. Musa Muhammad Nordin, a consultant pediatrician and neonatologist. Welcome, and thank you both very much for joining us today. So let's kickstart this discussion. Dr. Rohani, we've had this immunization program introduced in the 1950s, but what diseases do we cover, and, you know, are we doing well, do you think?
Thank you, Ms. Mira. Actually, there are 12 diseases that have been prevented through the vaccines under the National Immunization Program, which covers TB, hepatitis B, diphtheria, tetanus, pertussis, respiratory infection and meningitis due to Haemophilus influenza type B, and poliomyelitis, measles, mumps, rubella, and HPV, specifically for children, school children at age 13, only to the ladies. And JE we are giving to children in Sarawak because the incidence is high in Sarawak as compared to Peninsula Malaysia. So since the introduction of these vaccines, especially the old one like TB, hepatitis B and also DTP, HIP and polio, we can see there's a reduction of the diseases, the burden of the disease in Malaysia, and also the mortality. Until quite recent, we have surge of certain diseases, vaccine preventable diseases, like diphtheria and pertussis and also measles in the country. We believe there are pockets of people who do not come forward for vaccination, and it causes the herd immunity in that locality disrupt, and easily the virus and the bacteria transmit in the population.
Right. Dr. Musa, you have said that the anti-vaxxers or these pockets who are not vaccinating are the noisy few. I mean, should we ignore them, or, you know, what should we actually do?
I think we need to recognize that maybe in excess of 90% have accepted vaccination for the children and for themselves. There is a small percentage, probably in Malaysia less than 10%, who are hesitant. I call them vaccine hesitancy. And the bulk of them, if we are able to inform them, emphasize the safety of vaccine, and show to them the effectiveness of these vaccines towards eradicating and eliminating disease, then I think we can win them over. But there is this less than 0.5% in Malaysia who, no matter what you say to them, they have made up their minds. They are the ones that I mentioned as being the anti-vaxxers or the noisy few, right? They're very few. So don't be intimidated by them. I don't think my rationale, my science is going to change their position. But I hope with this program that we have today, those who are hesitant, unsure, confused, we can bring them over, and hopefully they will immunize the children and immunize themselves.
Okay.
You know, Dr. Musa, you're at the front lines. You're a pediatrician, so you meet very often with many of these parents. And let me just quote some figures. You know, back in 2013, the reported number of children who were not vaccinated was around 470. And in 2016, it was 1,600. So we have hundreds of parents who are making a conscious decision to exclude their children, their infants and children, from being vaccinated. And perhaps, Dr. Musa, as a pediatrician, why do you think parents are making these decisions? What are they worried about? Perhaps you can share with us.
I think the primary concern of this parents who are hesitant about immunizing their children is, one, with regards to the safety of vaccine. They are concerned with the ingredients that is present in the vaccine, which the anti-vaxxers describe as poisons. So I would like to reassure these parents that these vaccines have been in the market since the 1940s. And for one vaccine to be released into the market to be used on our healthy children and healthy adolescents and healthy adults is at least 10 years. And having said that, they've got to go through four phases of clinical trials. Mm. And even then, before they're being released, they must be licensed by the national regulatory bodies. So that is to make sure that the vaccines are safe, they are effective, and they are pure. So my call to parents out there is that these are vaccines that have undergone clinical trials, scientific rigors, and we must make sure that they are safe for our children. That's why my challenge to the anti-vaxxers is to show me the evidence that they are poisons.
Sure.
Because they would say, mercury. Now, the amount of mercury in breast milk is twice the amount of mercury that is present in vaccines. And the mercury that is present in vaccines is ethyl mercury, mm-hmm. which is rapidly removed from the body. And then when they failed with mercury, they went on to aluminum. Aluminum is the number three metal in the world. And they say, it's dangerous. Hello, the amount of aluminum in breast milk is twice that in vaccine. In formula mix, is 10 times. In soya milk, is 40 times. Does that mean we don't feed our babies with breast or soya milk?
But let me ask you, Dr. Musa and also Dr. Rani, you know, there have been discussions concerning the content of mercury, and supposedly it leads towards children becoming autistic. And this link, supposedly, a link to vaccines, has been bandied about for the past decade or so. But it has been debunked. There has been many studies.
It has been debunked. Yeah. It was first forwarded by Andrew Wakefield in 1998 in a very prestigious paper in The Lancet. all 10 of his co-authors withdrew from the studies.
Of course.
Right? This, in my opinion, is the greatest medical fraud of the 20th century. And it has done a lot of disservice to the children.
But let me ask Dr. Rani. Dr. Rani, we know this. We have evidence. The study has been debunked. The information is available out there. Is the information getting to these anti-vaxxers? Do they understand that there is no link? I mean, where do you see in terms of the Ministry of Health?
Yeah, we already informed the public through our health education materials and even through our Immunize for Life program. Eh, Datuk Musa,
yes.
We already informed them. But as Datuk Musa said, this 0.5% anti-vaxxers are the one that whatever you say, they won't change their mind. They are the outlier in the population. They won't change.
But so are you saying we should ignore them then?
How should I say? Because if, let's say, you put your energy in those group, you will be exhausted. And you won't have enough time and energy to concentrate on those people on over the fence or those people who really need the information. Because I believe in any issues, there are outliers who really against whatever we say. Whatever you say, they won't change their mind. So we must focus on those who need the information and those over the fence, that we don't want them to change their mind and become one of the...
Let's talk a little bit about the outliers and a noisy few, as quoted Dr. Musa. Many of these people seem to be well-educated. Many of them seem to be in the urban areas, and they are coming from the middle class and higher income households. How are we... What are we doing? How are we ensuring that this information reaches out to them? And what makes them more susceptible to this disinformation? Because we hear from the Ministry of Health that there is really very little problems in terms of the rural areas in terms of vaccinations. We are seeing 90 to 100% pretty much in terms of vaccination rates. But in these areas where these outliers, hundreds of parents who are coming from this background, who are making this conscious decision to exclude their children from vaccination. So what's going on there? Dr. Musa, you must encounter them quite often.
Yeah, I do. All I have to say to them is that my colleagues and I have been in the business of vaccinology and immunology for over 30 years. And our predecessors have done the research much, much earlier, since the 1950s. So there is a bulk of research to show that the vaccines are safe and the vaccines are effective. And these anti-vaxxers, they are the ones who just spend a few hours on Google and they become experts overnight.
Doctors, right?
Yeah. I mean, well, look at some of their gurus. Jenny McCarthy. Jenny McCarthy has one child who's got autism and she blamed it on the MMR vaccine. Now, there's a study in Denmark which looked at 2 million children. 1.5 billion had the vaccine. 500,000 did not have the vaccine. And she showed, and the study in Denmark showed, there was no difference in the risk of autism. And her series is one. And how many were there in Andrew Wakefield's series? 8 patients.
Yep.
Yeah. So I think if that is not able to convince you, I don't know how else I can be scientific and rational with this. Guys.
You know, Dr. Musa, the fact that it got into the Lancet carried a lot of weight.
You know what?
It was journal. It was the Lancet.
You are right. Lancet is a prestigious journal in the United Kingdom. That was... I pulled my hair when that happened. And it came to Malaysia the next day through CAP in Penang, and I immediately wrote to the papers to debunk the claim by CAP, you know, quoting that paper. Mm-hmm. So it's really a disappointment, but can I tell your audience that paper was retracted by the Lancet 10 years later?
It took 10 years.
It took a long time. Very disappointing.
Why did it take such a long time? And, you know, then you left that 10-year gap room for conspiracy theories as to why it got pulled off. You know, you allowed it for 10 years. So those doubts play in everyone's mind.
No, actually. If you only look at the anti-vaxxers, it began when the first vaccine was invented in 1796 by Edward Jenner.
Yeah.
This is against God's providence. you know, this vaccine is harmful. It causes smallpox, they said, which is not true. And what are they saying today? It causes autism. It's against the will of God. So it started since then. But if you look at modern anti-vaxxers, the real problem started probably in 1982. And it wasn't the MMR. It was actually the DTP, diphtheria, tetanus, pertussis. Because the pertussis vaccine, which is whooping cough, in Malay we call it batuk seratus hari. They really cough for 100 days. Yeah? There was a documentary made on that vaccine, and it showed that immediately after the jab, the children became abnormal, autistic, wore helmets, had seizures. They really dramatized the thing. Yeah? And then it was shown that it was not due to the vaccine. All these children had an abnormal gene. Whether there was a vaccine or not, they would have suffered those seizures and abnormal changes in their behavior. But that was not publicized. That was 1982.
So it's pretty much since the invention of vaccines, there's been resistance to it regardless.
Yeah. 1796,
Let me ask Dr. Rani. Dr. Rani, a few years ago, there were a few cases of diphtheria, I think in Kedah and then later in Malacca.
Yeah.
And just last year, there was an outbreak, if I may use the word, in Putrajaya of mumps.
Yeah.
I think in July and then October, there were two schools where children were coming down with mumps. And it's surprising to a lot of people that in one of the most developed townships or states, we have a situation where they should have access, they should be vaccinated, yet an outbreak of mumps can occur in these schools. So from the ministry's perspective, I mean, what can be done? I mean, obviously they have access, they're mostly educated. What happened there?
For diphtheria outbreaks in 2016 and 2017, majority of the children affected are those who did not have their vaccination, or at least they did not complete their vaccination. So when a member of the family got infected, they easily spread in the household. That's what happened in 2016. And 2017, we have similar outbreak in another group, whereby the children did not have any vaccination at all.
Mm.
So for mums, it's a different story. Because as you
MMR,
might...
MMR, right?
We are giving MMR. As you know that our vaccine is not 100% effective. And some are only about 80%, some about 98%. So it differs between vaccine to vaccines. And it has been reported that even with two doses of mums, the protection is around 90% to 95%. So there are gaps about 5 to 10% who did not zero convert.
Mm.
So they are susceptible to infection. So that's why we have outbreak during that October and July.
I see.
In Putrajaya?
Yeah, we have a few in Perak, in Putrajaya, and in Johor.
A few pockets.
Yeah.
Which makes me wonder whatever happened to the herd immunity effect. If everybody, you know, if such a large number have been vaccinated anyway, didn't herd immunity sort of kick in to protect the rest?
Yeah, because of there is herd immunity, that's why the number of cases in that cluster is not big. Even though it occurs in schools whereby there are many students, but the number is not that big. If let's say the children is not vaccinated at all, the outbreak might be major.
Even worse.
Yes.
Okay.
I think sometimes with the MMR vaccine, measles, mumps, rubella vaccine, sometimes the parents forget to get the second dose.
Mm,
it's very important to attain optimal protection. You need the second dose. So parents forget. Parents are busy, you know. But, so that's why the cases accumulate after a few years, 4 to 5 years, you get an outbreak. Yeah? But the concern here is that it's not just mumps.
Yeah.
I've never seen a case of diphtheria in my lifetime, by the way, yeah? Until I went to Bangladesh 2 weeks ago. There's a huge outbreak now in Bangladesh.
Mm.
So I want to remind parents, please do not forget to complete the vaccination of your kids. Measles, mumps, rubella in Malaysia is given at 9 months, and then the second dose is given at 1 year old. Mm. Make sure you get it done. Then you get optimal protection. Now, mumps is not just the swelling, you know. People forget prior, before the advent of vaccination, mumps was the number one cause of viral meningitis, infection of the lining of the brain and the spinal cord. The number one cause of deafness, yeah? The number one cause of inflammation of the ovaries and the testicles, leading the men and women to be subfertile. So it is not benign.
Okay. We're discussing vaccinations in our first public health policy series, led by Azrul Muhammad Khalib, CEO of Galen Centre for Health and Social Policy. If you'd like to get involved in the discussion, please give us a call. The number is 03-77-109-000. You can tweet BFM Radio or WhatsApp 018-789-8899. What we want to know is, would you vaccinate your child? And we have a Twitter poll going on at the moment. Should non-vaccination vaccinated children be banned from attending school? So far, we're standing at 95 votes. 69% say yes, they should be banned from going to school. 31% saying no, they shouldn't be banned. So join that discussion. Give us a call on BFM 89.9.
BFM 89.9.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. In our Health and Living segment, we're kicking off our first public health series. We're having a dialogue here with Azrul Muhammad Khalib, CEO of Galen Centre for Health and Social Policy, and Dr. Rohani Jahiz, Head of the Vaccine Prevention of Disease, Food and Waterborne, Ministry of Health Malaysia, together with Dr. Musa Muhammad Nordin, a consultant paediatrician and neonatologist. We've gone through Malaysia's National Immunisation Programme. What are some of the challenges that we've been facing? We've seen the emergence of diphtheria and mumps at the moment in the last couple of years. When we have a very successful vaccination program, what's actually going on? We do know that there are pockets of people who are now resisting vaccinating their children. So we're going to have this move into the discussion now. First, it was I call them the Wakefield generation, all of those who read Andrew Wakefield's sort of study in The Lancet. And of course, all of that was, said to be not true. But many people bought into his findings. But now in Malaysia, we seem to be seeing another group of people who don't seem to want to vaccinate their children. And these are the people who are concerned about non-halal vaccines. I'm going to start with Dr. Rohani. Where's the ministry stand on this? Is it a growing concern that many people are not vaccinating their children because vaccines are not halal?
Actually, when we register a vaccine, we do not look at the halal haram of a vaccine. We're just looking at the technical, the safety of the vaccine, the quality and the efficacy that the vaccine will protect a child against the disease it intends to protect against. Okay, so halal is not an issue because you know that majority of our vaccines comes from the Western countries. Yeah? Okay, so actually halal issue is strictly under JAKIM, Jabatan Agama Islam, Jabatan Kemajuan Islam Malaysia. Yeah? So from our study for the those vaccine hesitancy group, we noted that quite a number of them actually consider that halal vaccine is important for them, for their baby to get vaccinated.
What's the percentage like, if you could share that with us?
When we look at the data from, it's about 1,000, I think roughly about 10%.
Okay.
10% of the those who refuse. But majority of those who refuse actually because they practice homeopathy.
Homeopathy.
Okay. That's the major, the big chunk of it. And when we did the National Hemophilia Survey in 2016, we noted that among those who refused or had incomplete vaccination, only about 2.5% actually noted that they refused to get their baby vaccinated because of halal vaccine.
Vaccinations. Yeah. Okay. But, it's interesting that Malaysia now has signed there's a company that has now signed a deal with a Saudi-based pharmaceutical company to actually go into halal, the production of halal vaccines. What does that say about Malaysia? I mean, is it something that we are concerned about as well? And we'll go into that discussion as to what halal vaccine really is. But in the meantime, do we have somebody on the phone? Hi. Okay, we've lost Jade, but that's okay. We'll go on. What is a halal vaccine? Dr. Rani?
This is a very tough question.
Maybe Dr. Musa can answer that.
Dr. Musa.
Is there such a thing as a halal vaccine?
I don't like the term halal vaccine because in my opinion, all the vaccines are halal.
Exactly.
Because when you say one vaccine is halal, that means you're suggesting the other is not halal.
Yeah.
As far as Jakim is concerned, all the vaccines that are available on the National Immunization Program is permissible. Mm. All right? So whatever that is being done by the nurse when she injects or put the drops in the mouth, that is permissible. And that's halal.
I think, Dr. Musa, if I could just extend from that, I think there's at least 8 fatwas from the Malaysian National Fatwa Committee on the subject of vaccines.
Yep.
And it covered rubella, tuberculosis, diphtheria, to HPV, human papillomavirus, and meningococcal meningitis. And the fatwa state very clearly that the vaccines under the NIP, the National Immunization Program, are permissible, as you say, on the basis that it is darurat or emergency to curb the spread of disease. So if this is the case, if it's very clearly that the religious position that has been from the religious authorities so clearly stated, why are we facing this problem then? Why is there still a question of whether this is halal or haram vaccine?
You know, okay, that's the fatwa from the Majlis Fatwa Kebangsaan. I would like to paint the bigger picture first, all right? One, especially for your Muslim listeners, yeah? There's a verse in the Quran that says, Waman ahya fa ka innam ahyanna tha jami'a. If you save one life, it is though you save the whole of humanity. That's from the Quran. And secondly, there is a benchmark in Islam which says al-wiqayatu khayru min al-ilaj. Prevention is better than cure. You know this much well. An ounce of prevention is better than a pound of cure. So these are the values that I hope the Muslim listeners would treasure. Yeah? And that is, and as far as vaccination is concerned, at this point in time, as I'm speaking, we are saving 2.5 million lives every year. Right? And there is an opportunity if we use better the available vaccine, or if we use the newer vaccines like rotavirus and pneumococcal, an opportunity to save another 1.5 million lives. And as I'm speaking, we are preventing 750,000 disabilities a year.
Mm.
So this, my personal fatwa goes beyond darurat.
Oh, personal fatwa.
It goes beyond. It's saying that it's not just darurat. Yeah, yeah. It is doing a service to humanity.
Mm.
And this is not my first fatwa. It actually comes from the fatwa of the European Council for Research. European Council for Research and Fatwa. So, which is headed by the topmost cleric in the world, which is Sheikh Yusuf Al-Qardawi. And I think the Muslims will know this. So I hope I reassure the listeners, the one who hesitant, that vaccination is probably the topmost public health intervention. Just second to?
Water.
Clean water.
But are we not sending out mixed messages now that we are producing halal vaccines? And right here in Malaysia.
What we are saying, I think it is a very bad terminology, in my opinion, because in halal business is huge now. Everyone wants to dig into the pie.
It's really a business decision.
Huge business. Right. Huge business. Halal vaccines, halal cosmetics, halal whatever. Yeah? Now, I would say what we're moving towards now is non-animal-based constituents in vaccine. That is the movement that we're seeing worldwide now. Removing all traces of animal proteins in vaccines.
Is that possible?
Oh, that's possible. There are already some work going on in Italy. The rotavirus vaccine was using a lot of animal enzymes. There is one being done by our colleagues in Indonesia in collaboration with New Zealand, Australia, using non-animal-based enzymes.
So a substitute is definitely possible.
Oh yes.
Using soy lecithin, even milk.
Exactly.
Okay, we'll come back. Just 1 minute. We have Jade on the line. Jade, you have a question.
Hi. Yes, my question is regarding the recent cases of the dengue.
Could you speak up, Jade? We can't hear you very clearly.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, much better.
Yes, my question is in regards to the dengue vaccine.
Yes.
So, the only dengue vaccine currently in use in more than a dozen countries around the world
is
experiencing concerns and questions regarding its safety. So could this be reasonable grounds to be concerned about vaccine safety? So that's my question.
In general. Okay, in general. Thank you very much, Jay. Thank you for that.
So vaccine safety, Dr.
Rohani.
Okay, when we look back at the evidence given by the company, they said that if we give vaccination, this dengue vaccine to the dengue naive population, meaning they are not infected by dengue before, they might be, even though there is not enough evidence yet to show that actually after giving a vaccine to a dengue naive population, and when they get infected with the dengue virus, they might have severe disease. It's not well proven yet. But then, you know, because of not enough evidence, we dare not take the chance and risk the population. I think that's the reason that we are very quite cautious to introduce it.
But remember, it's already licensed in 18 countries.
Of course.
Some of the landmark trials were done in Malaysia, the ASEAN trial, and then another landmark trial in Latin America. This is good science, okay? And it was published in the New England Journal of Medicine and the Lancet. Yeah. So are we suggesting that these guys who did the review articles were not smart, were not aware of the safety of the vaccine? No. So that's why we're very clear. When you read very carefully the concerns about safety, as was mentioned by Dr. Naraini, let me first emphasize that the efficacy of the vaccine is 60%, which is okay for a vaccine, you know. But the good thing about the vaccine, it prevents progression to dengue hemorrhagic fever, the most severe forms of dengue, 90%. It prevents hospitalization, another 80%. I'm sure many of us would have friends, relatives who've either succumbed to the disease or have had very bad bleeding from dengue. So with the most recent finding, all it tells us is that you must give it to a person who has already had a prior dengue illness, i.e. they are seropositive, which many in Malaysia are. You know, because we are prevalent. But if the person has never had dengue, i.e. seronegative, then there is a small chance, maybe 2 in 1,000 in 5 years, that they may develop a most severe form of dengue, but none have died, let's be clear. None have had bleeding. None have had very severe forms of dengue. So it's they can progress, but not severe.
So there are 4 criteria, if I'm not mistaken, when you look at a vaccine. It's safety, efficacy.
And the quality of the vaccine.
And the quality of vaccine. So 3. So these are some of the criteria that need to be evaluated rigorously in order for a vaccine to be introduced into the market, but also to be accepted by the NIP. So I just wanted to bring us back to the issue of the halal vaccine. And as was mentioned by Mira just now, Malaysia is now in a position to produce the first halal vaccine, a.k.a. no animal derivative inside vaccine. So what does this look like? I mean, when do we expect the first vaccine, and what will it be that will come out from this factory in Puchong, I think?
No. But by the way, there are many vaccines that are presently available now that do not have any animal derivatives, like the pneumococcal conjugate vaccine, which we've been trying to get the Ministry of Health to introduce into the National Immunization Program. I'm going to put Dr. Naraini on the hot seat. No, we brought this up to the Minister of Health because it is the number one killer. 1 million children in the world die from pneumococcal invasive disease. We must have it. And by the way, the Selangor government is giving the vaccine FOC to the children and the elders, and I think the Penang government as well. So because we had a chat with them. So I think it's time for the federal government to take this on board. So this vaccine, like the hip vaccine, has got no animal protein at all. So many of the vaccines that is available today don't have animal protein. The ones that have are, for example, rotavirus vaccine, right? Because it uses lipase enzymes from animals. MMR uses gelatin. Gelatin either from porcine source or bovine source. And that this is the main reason sometimes one in a million they get a reaction, an adverse reaction, as a sensitivity to the bovine gelatin.
Okay, interesting. Okay. We'll come back and continue the discussion. We're going to touch on animal protein again. And I think the messaging, as you said, as far as the dengue vaccine is concerned, what Dr. Musa just explained as to what was, you know, actually the problem with the dengue vaccine is not coming through. All what we are hearing is that, you know what, don't immunize because it's bad news. And that generally is what we are listening, or that's what we're hearing. So in terms of messaging, how do we do this better? And we'll come back and continue that discussion. Vaccinations is what we're discussing. If you have a question for us, give us a call. The number is 03-77-109-1000. Tweet BFM Radio or WhatsApp 018-789-8899. Should kids who aren't vaccinated be banned from schools is our Twitter poll that's going on at the moment at BFM Radio. At the moment, out of 123 votes, 68% have said yes, kids who are not vaccinated should be banned from schools. 32% say no. So that's more than three quarters of the people who think that, you know, people, there should be punitive laws or something in place. And that's something we'll discuss up next on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
The Bigger Picture on BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. If you have just joined us in our Health and Living segment today, it's our first public health policy series. It's on vaccinations. What will it take to convince the anti-vaxxers to get themselves vaccinated is what we're discussing. And the public health policy series will be led by Azrul Muhammad Khalib, CEO of Galen Center for Health and Social Policy. And joining us today, Dr. Rohani Jahiz, Head of the Vaccine Prevention of Disease, Food and Waterborne, Ministry of Health Malaysia, and Dr. Musa Muhammad Nordin, a consultant pediatrician and neonatologist. We've gone through the works, halal vaccines, National Immunization Program. But let's talk about messaging, Dr. Musa. Do you think the messaging is correct? I mean, there's already a huge concern as far as vaccinations are concerned. And when you get news coming out of the Philippines in relation to the dengue vaccine, for an example, what you've just conveyed to me is not what I have been hearing or reading. I've just been reading that the dengue vaccine is not working.
Oh, that's unfortunate, yeah. But because even though the vaccine is licensed in Malaysia under very strict conditions, I, as a pediatrician, have no access to the vaccine, yeah, because the pharmaceutical company must be doing what's called pharmacovigilance or post-marketing surveillance. So that's not happening. So I don't have access to the vaccine. I always feel that the vaccine was based on good science, and I am very clear in my mind that the vaccine is effective if used properly. So the situation in Philippines, in my humble opinion, is that it was good science, good vaccine, but very bad policy in terms of the implementation. So it now boils down to making sure that the person who is eligible for the vaccine gets a test being done to ensure that he or she is zero positive or zero negative. If she's or she is zero positive, then she will definitely benefit from the vaccine. Mm-hmm. But if zero negative, then she's not eligible for the vaccine. That's the current status.
So there must be a zero test before you take the vaccine.
We hope there will be a simple and accurate test that would ensure the status of the vaccinee, yeah, before you become eligible for the vaccine.
For the vaccine, yeah. Okay. And just coming back to animal protein, does this mean then that if we come up with this so-called vaccines which are, you know, without animal source, that you will find more people vaccinating, do you think, Dr. Rani?
Yeah, probably they will, more people accepting the vaccine. But
then we got to find it really quickly, and we really need to start producing it fast.
But as you, when you go through Facebook, those who really refuse vaccination, they are not only talking about the content of the vaccine. They were also looking at the source of the antigen used to produce the vaccine. They were talking about the media where the bacteria or the virus being cultured. You know, the initial process. They are not looking at the downstream process. They are looking at the upstream. They are I mean, if let's say you are producing a non-animal content vaccine, there are still issues that these people might bring up.
So what you're speaking about is like the oral polio vaccine, for example, the trypsin enzyme comes from a porcine derivative. So this would be something that they would be concerned about. So they use Dr. Google, try to find out where Malaysia gets its oral polio vaccine, finds out it's sourced from porcine, and sadly, because of that, they decide, I don't want my children to be vaccinated. Yeah. Is that how the thought processes work?
Yeah. If I can jump in, first, I would like to reassure all your listeners is that many of the vaccines that are being used today do not have any animal-based protein, all right? Only a few vaccines. We made mention about this earlier. The rotavirus vaccine, MMR, yeah? And point number two is that we don't use oral polio anymore. So no issues with that. We were amongst the first in Southeast Asia to use the injectable polio.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's very important because just using the oral polio, you may cause polio itself. One in a million. That's one of the adverse effects. We accept that. As scientists, we accept that. That's why we shifted away from oral polio to the injectable polio. And I am very happy if AJ Pharma or whatever, a Pharma Niaga sets up a plan here because there is actually a shortage of vaccines.
Mm-hmm.
You ask any of my colleagues, either as a general practitioner or pediatricians, we are short on the diphtheria, whooping cough, tetanus vaccine. We are short on many vaccines in Malaysia at this point in time. There's been a break. You know, Dr. Rohani can testify to that. So if they come up, they will make up for this deficiency in our supply chain. Can you imagine? Indonesia has got biopharma to mix its own vaccine, and Indonesia sells 60% of their supplies to the WHO.
Mm.
We should be doing similarly.
So we should definitely step up production.
Start production.
So let me just go back to the issue of messaging just now. We need to get to these anti-vaxxers, right? So there have been the soft approach, which is basically, you know, we should educate, we should create awareness, share information and so forth. And then there's a little bit of the tough love approach, which is people are saying that perhaps we should ban children who have not been vaccinated from entering school. What do you think? Should this be done?
We're still sending at 70% who think that children should be banned and 30% who say no.
The herd immunity only works if...
By the way, this policy is not a new political policy, all right? The United States of America. If you not vaccinate your child, sorry, you cannot go to a public school, all right? You either homeschool, and even the private school will not accept your kids. Right, my two girls went to the United States to do their undergraduate studies. Sir, has your child had his varicella chickenpox vaccine, measles, mumps, rubella vaccine, meningococcal vaccine? The whole lot. If you don't show evidence that you've either had the disease or you've had the vaccine, sorry, you cannot enter my university. That's the United States of America.
So that's law.
That's law.
Okay.
Yeah. In Australia, it was recently made as law as well. No jab, no play.
No school.
No play. Or no jab, no pay. They even lose the child benefits.
Benefits, yeah. That's right.
So we are just toying with the idea.
Dr. Rani, yes
should
or no?
We or not?
Yes or no?
Actually, at the ministry level, we thought of that policy.
Oh, okay.
But you have to really look at the other ministry, you know, we have the education for all children.
Mm.
So we cannot deny their right
to education.
Yeah, to go to school. So we have to actually balance between the two. And of course, as I mentioned by Azra just now, we continue educating the parents. We hope that they will change their mind because once they change their mind, they will be a change agent in the population. So, talking about the act in US, actually, I asked an officer from CDC Atlanta because I know that they have this law. What will they do actually when a child do not have vaccination? Actually, they allow the child to school, but when there is an outbreak occurs in the school, they don't allow the student to come to school, meaning to prevent them from getting the infection in the
school. Insulate,
quarantine those not vaccinated. That's what they said.
How about There's another approach also, which is even tougher. Maybe we should jail the parents.
This is another
who haven't vaccinated their kids. There's a poll that we're running on the Galen Center's Facebook page right now, and 80% are supportive of the idea of
jailing
the parents. Because there are hundreds of parents, right? In the case of Australia, there's a laws. Don't they get fined or jailed? What do you think?
Should your guys are tougher than me, man. I thought I thought I was the bad guy, man. But I wouldn't go to that extent.
Malaysian public,
you have to be very careful, you know? No, it's important. Because if the child is not vaccinated, all right, and he gets measles, all right, he gets measles, and he goes to a daycare, can you imagine the child who's under one? Most of these babies are relatively immunocompromised. Or if the child has a cancer, it is virtually a death sentence for that child, you know.
Yeah.
And that's why this parents who do not vaccinate, you want your right, but it does not give you the right to pass measles, chickenpox to the other child. That is not a right.
Is it abuse?
Yes.
Can it be considered abuse? Yeah.
It is abuse.
Dr. Rani?
Actually, our parents in Malaysia, when they have certain infectious diseases, they are not supposed to send their children to kindergarten or to schools. But you know, because...
It never happens.
Yeah, I know. Because nobody to look after their
the kids. So
okay, so where do we go from here? Let's sum up, Dr. Rani. Where do you think government can... How do you think government can take this initiative forward to ensure that more and more people get vaccinated?
We'll continue educating the public. We hope they will change their mind. And with the new initiative, with the production of vaccine in the country, we hope they will come forward. More people will come forward for vaccination. And we really do see that when there's an outbreak, people really scared and they come forward for vaccination. And I hope the trend will continue. I mean, not the outbreak, but then the acceptance to vaccination.
The vaccines, okay. Dr. Musa?
Well, number one, I would like to make a plea to the Ministry of Health to include the rotavirus vaccine and the pneumococcal conjugate vaccine. That's number one. Number two, to all your listeners out there, please Google Immunize for Life, IFL.com. You'll get brilliant YouTube, brilliant information. You will listen to the mother Malaysia, Tun Hasma, talking about her experiences and how she is so exasperated with mothers not vaccinating the children. Yeah. She was a public health doctor, all right? So I think that would be her brilliant service to our nation. Yeah.
Azra.
95% of children born in Malaysia are immunized. There's 5% who are not immunized. And we definitely need to ensure that our children are protected from these vaccine-preventable diseases. There's no excuse why they should not be vaccinated. And we certainly must be aggressive and be proactive in making sure that these anti-vaxxers are educated and their children, most importantly, are taken care of and given life-saving vaccines.
And we continue this discussion. Please join us on our Facebook page, BFM The Bigger Picture. We want to know what you think about this discussion today and how we can take things forward. Thank you all very much for joining me today. That was Azrul Mohamad Khalib, CEO of the Galen Center for Health and Social Policy, Dr. Rohani Jahiz, Head of the Vaccine Prevention of Disease, Food and Waterborne, Ministry of Health Malaysia, and Dato Dr. Musa Mohamad Nordin, Consultant Pediatrician and Neonatologist, on this first public health policy discussion on vaccinations on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.